morning, everyone. Welcome to the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. It's Tuesday, May the 6th, 2003. At this time, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2176. And with the tablet gavel, we'll open as a subcommittee of the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development.
Mr. Chair, it's House Bill 2173. That's a typo. I apologize.
Oh, all right. Well, I was trying, you know, I looked over here and that, so we will restate that. House Bill 2173.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this bill is referred to Ways and Means from the Senate floor. It's passed through the House Transportation, House floor, and Senate Transportation committees. And it's relating to imposing civil penalties for failure to register as a pilot. Or failure to register as your aircraft. And with that, I think I'll let the agency explain the bill if you want.
That's good.
There is a fiscal impact.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill looks to, I'm Ann Crook, Director of the Oregon Department of Aviation. House Bill 2173 is the agency's attempt to fix a problem that we've had for a number of years with our registration programs. The current process for enforcing compliance with our pilot and aircraft registration programs requires that a ticket be written by a law enforcement officer and then that ticket be processed through the court system. That's a process that's outside of the agency's control, and we haven't been able to find a court system or a law enforcement agency to process these for us for a number of years. So the result is that aircraft owners and pilots have found that there is basically no enforcement mechanism, and so approximately 40% of them are not compliant with the current requirement because really there's no reason to be. It's costing us a lot of money in multiple phone calls and letters to try and get compliance with the program. It's also losing us revenue that we are really entitled to because it is a requirement to be registered. It's hurting the state police search and rescue program, which benefits from the revenues from the pilot registration program. And I can tell you that the pilot community, at least the ones that do pay, are feeling very put upon that the good guys who are being compliant with the law are sort of being punished because the ones that aren't being compliant with the law get away scot-free without any repercussions. We have spent several years working through the court system to try to find a way to make this process work and hadn't been able to. So then we explored some other route to enforce compliance with the program. And came up with basically the compliance enforcement mechanism that most other state agencies that have registration or licensing type of programs use, which is to instead use an administrative process so that if someone is delinquent in registering, then they can request an administrative hearing before an administrative law judge. That gets adjudicated then. And after that point, then we can send them to collections, or we can send them to collections when we declare that there's a violation if they don't request to have a hearing. So what this does is gives us a process to seek collections. Our goal is not to levy huge civil penalties. Our goal, rather, is to get people compliant with the program. I'm sorry that the Oregon Pilots Association couldn't be here this morning. They said that they may stop by on their way between Corvallis and Portland, so if they show up, I'll let you know. but they are very much in favor of this. Oregon Pilots Association represents almost 1,800 pilots in the state, and again, because of their support of the agency's programs and the revenue that supports those programs, and their feeling that the people who are compliant with the law shouldn't be paying extra than people who are not compliant, they're very supportive of this program. Mr. Chair, I know that you've got questions about it, and so I'll complete my testimony there, and we can discuss this bill a little bit if you'd like.
Well, you're waiting for my question. Well, yesterday afternoon we met. Senator Dukes was in there for a few minutes, you know, to talk about the issue. And I'll just give everyone the background of what we've been doing. Ever since this came up, I was very curious as to, first of all, why we were collecting the money. And the reason is we're collecting the money because we want the money. But secondly, which was the main point, is we have a situation in which a pilot and an aircraft are licensed by the federal government. And they track that information. In fact, yesterday morning we had a final conversation with the folks in which we found out that the bulk of the data is available now online from the Federal Aviation Agency. And they are accumulating additional information right now because of the considerations of 9/11. And a lot of that information will be available to us. So the idea was we're bothering, what is a total of 6,900? What's the total numbers, Anne? I've seen the amount that aren't reporting here.
Well, there's actually 9,800 pilots, according to FAA records, in Oregon.
All right. So that number was the number of pilots that weren't responding.
6,900 was probably the number of pilots currently registered with us.
And my understanding is under the current system, you don't require a pilot that's not current to actually pay the fee anyway.
That's correct.
Okay. And that's difficult to determine, and that's why we may mail out, 9,000 and then receive back a number, then have to discriminate between those who are current pilots and those who are, in fact, not current pilots. For example, right now, I'm not current. That is available on the website of the FAA, though. Also, a consideration that the committee had earlier was the fact that we have a $100,000 computer program to track the pilots in the aircraft, when in fact that data, a good share of that data, is available online. Anne has concern that it isn't enough data, but at the same time, we found out that if there was any loopholes in there, that in fact, for example, pilots who had requested that their addresses not be published, that can be, you can go through that if there was any need for the department to know who that person was, can go right back through the state police and access that other file. Is that what you found out yesterday afternoon? Why don't you kind of give everybody a background?
Sure.
Because you were going to talk with them after we left the meeting.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, we haven't had an issue getting addresses from pilots that didn't want to disclose that, because we do have a relationship with the FAA and have demonstrated a need to have that information. So getting addresses hasn't been an issue. However, the information that we do collect currently that FAA just doesn't is home and business work numbers or phone numbers and their home base airport. And the part of FAA that I spoke to yesterday was Flight Service Station in McMinnville, who those are the people that actually make phone calls or look for lost pilots if there's an issue. And they said that some of their flight service specialists were aware that we had phone number information and they used that resource. Some of them didn't, and so after our discussion yesterday, I talked to the manager. She was going to make sure that all of their specialists knew that we had that information available, because she said that was very, very important, that FAA doesn't collect phone number information. They have no other access to it, and that can either slow them down in searching for a lost pilot. I asked her, if you didn't have phone number information and our resource wasn't available to you, what would you do? And she said, well, we'd get out phone books and start looking, or else implement the search and rescue program and start sending local police or search and rescue volunteers out to start looking for someone, which could be a huge expense and a lot of use of resources when a phone call could make the difference. So what I got from the Flight Service Station, who is not the people that collect the information, this is the people that use it, they said that they would be very sorry to lose the phone number information from us.
And another consideration was the amount of money that actually is being spent for search and rescue. Do you have a report on on how many dollars are actually being spent in Oregon the last 2 years for search and rescue?
I can tell you what the, Mr. Chair, what the limitation for the current biennium was, $81,000.
Okay, and we're transferring how much under the current system?
Well,
is that the number you just? Oh, okay, I didn't hear.
Correct.
That, so I'm sorry about that.
Correct, and that's been pretty consistent over the last couple of biennia.
Now, one other question that I had was relative to the idea of a civil penalty. It appears to me that this is a reduction of teeth, but also in procedures, if in fact you have 3,638 unregistered pilots and 4,014 unregistered aircraft in Oregon, that in fact if those people decide that they're going to resist, what's going to be the procedure to collect that? It seems to me like that could be very expensive too, particularly like on pilots, we're collecting $8.
Mr. Chair, the procedure would be, again, like I described a minute ago, that we would find them in noncompliance and could then put them in collections for the amount. The administrative rule has yet to be written, pending the passage of this bill, over how much the civil penalty would actually be. Clearly, a civil penalty for an $8 violation would be much lower than a civil penalty for, you know, a $200 violation for the aircraft. So those things would be different. But the process would be that we would find them in violation and then put them in collections. Or at that point, then they could request a hearing before an administrative law judge, and yes, then there would be some expenses going along with the hearing. Our expectation, though, is that once pilots became aware that there were some teeth and there was enforcement action taking place, that they would choose to be compliant rather than go through either of those processes. As a matter of fact, we've found since this bill has been working through, that our registrations have increased, that people have called up and said, oh, I found out that I'm going to have to do this now, so I'm going to go ahead and get registered now. So we've already found that just the specter of having an enforcement mechanism has increased the registrations.
Senator Dukes.
This bill wasn't popular in the Senate. First we sent it back to committee, and then we held it over. We didn't send it back to them. We thought about it. We held it over. And when it came back and it hadn't changed any, then we sent it to Ways and Means. And quite honestly, it came to Ways and Means today. That was the intention of the floor when we sent it off the floor. With an eight, let me ask, does the federal government care whether we register pilots or not?
No, Senator Dukes, Mr. Chair, no. The federal government doesn't care.
So if the pilots don't register, you can't turn to the feds and say
that's correct.
It's a black mark against them. It seems to me that you can probably use the Department of Revenue to do your collections, but this is an $8 fee. I don't care what you do to collect it. The cost of collection is going to far exceed the fee. And that doesn't sit well with me. It doesn't sit well with me that it's not in the governor's budget, so this is not something that's worked into the budget or was planned for. It doesn't sit well with me that you never mentioned it when we got to committee and reviewed the budget. It was a real surprise to see it come to the floor because it was not anticipated as we put any of the budget or anything else together. And all of the dollar numbers that we talked about didn't include this. And now it's here. I haven't changed my mind, Mr. Chair. I suspect you could look those phone numbers up in the phone book, quite honestly. And I think for an agency to be out there spending large sums of money to collect an $8 fee when most all of the information is available from another source, I guess it's nice for them to be able, you know, for you to be able to have all of Oregon's pilots registered in Oregon, but I'm not ready for the civil penalty.
For the record, Chair George, Senator Dukes, Lori Byerly, Department of Administrative Services. I'd just like to clarify one point you made, Senator. And this bill was pre-session filed by the governor's office for the department. And it's true that there is no limitation in the agency's budget or any revenue associated directly with the bill. That was not incorporated as part of the agency's budget bill. Simply because this bill was perceived as being more of a substantive civil penalty type mechanism, it's unknown what you know, if it, would the bill be effective? We're hoping it would be. We're hoping, like Ann says, there would be additional compliance, but the magnitude of that is unknown. And when you factor in the possibility of additional costs, like you've just mentioned, which are very valid, there will be some costs to hearings. Very difficult to try and pin down a precise amount of money that would be related to directly to this bill. So that's why there are no dollar amounts associated in the bill itself. So, and since there was no direct fiscal impact or a limitation impact associated with that, it was not packaged with the budget bill in that way. So I apologize if that was a concern or if that seemed to be, you know, going outside of the budget hearing, but that was not the intent. It was just that it was perceived to be more of a substantive issue. What can the department do? What can we do in the statute to allow them to be able to enforce this registration requirement versus it being a budgetary issue?
We're going to upset some folks. I mean, civil penalties upset people. We're going to go through all of that, and we're not even getting anything out of it dollar-wise except maybe in the future.
Chair Dukes, Chair George, Senator Dukes, I believe I recognize that the committee is concerned about the dollars related to the legislation, but I believe where the department has places the value on this on this bill is being able to get pilots to comply with the registration requirements, to be able to obtain and have available the data that Ann was talking about earlier, the telephone numbers, the information about where pilots are flying out of as far as home airports, the information about specific aircraft in this state, where they're located, you know, what those numbers are. I think the value to the department is more on the information they're able to obtain and collect versus it being really any money-making mechanism. I think we've talked about this is only an $8 registration fee, and obviously at that level they're not trying to make money. Not trying to make money off the registration to begin with. They're trying to gather information.
This says $241,000 for pilot registrations and $221,000 for aircraft registrations.
Chair George, Senator Deuce, I'm talking specifically about at $8 a registration to register a pilot. The intent is not to be putting a chunk of that money aside for some other purpose. To try and to gather the information. I believe that's where the department's at its focus, is trying to collect and make that information available when it's needed. Not that this is a revenue-generating activity.
Senator Morris.
Mr. Chair, what do other states do?
And you were able to get that number, because when I was talking to the Fed yesterday, I asked how many of them do this, and they indicated only a few, but you felt it was a bigger number. Were you able to achieve that number?
Yes, and Chair George, Senator Morse, it's actually in between what I thought and what you had heard. As of 2001, actually, that's when I've got data that's collected for all of the states. There were 8 states that registered pilots. But significantly, I think a large percentage of those are in this region. Besides us, Washington, Montana, and Idaho all collect pilot registration fees. So it is a more prominent function in the Northwest region than it is nationwide.
Follow up.
Would the feds be willing to amend their registration forms to provide additional information? Has that question been asked?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morse, I think for the FAA to change their registration policies would probably be even more difficult than us doing that. And particularly right now, Senator George and I talked about how with a greater need for homeland security type of information that FAA would anticipate collecting more. However, everything that I've heard from the federal government is that Federal Aviation Administration is not a part of the Department of Homeland Security, and the communication between the two is not very good. And as a matter of fact, since the Department of Homeland Security was formed, and so the Federal Aviation Administration is separate from that, Department of Homeland Security has been contacting us to get contact addresses and phone numbers and all of that information for pilots and airports and aviation businesses and things like that, rather than from the FAA. So that's just trying to be illustrative of the sort of disconnect between Homeland Security and FAA at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm having a very, very difficult time understanding
what this information is going to provide the department, and how it, if there are eight states, there, and the states that you mentioned are states that are very small population. A lot of money into an activity that will yield really marginal results. If the issue is information, that's one thing. If the issue is additional financing for the agency, that's another. And I guess, help me understand, what is the real issue?
Well, Chair George and Senator Morse, that's a very good question. And the real issue is really both. Because, and remember, in this bill we're talking about both pilot registration and aircraft registration. And aircraft registration ranges from $25 to $187. So that's the bulk of what we're talking about here, and that is the bulk of our compliance issue. And the aircraft registration program, the information that's available from the FAA is not good and reliable. And I think, Senator George, you found out the same thing in your context. So the pilot registration portion is a small piece of that. And from that, we do get this information about where pilots are located, and that helps us do planning for airport development, and the phone number information in addition to the addresses. And part of what that gives us is the ability to have a closer personal relationship with our customers. Because we're small and our customer base is smaller than maybe ODOT, we do have a personal relationship with the people we serve. Many of them feel comfortable calling us and asking us all kinds of questions. And we use those phone numbers for other things besides emergency response, and sometimes they sound like sort of silly things, but they are customer service types of things. For example, if I read in the paper that a pilot flew a volunteer mercy flight or something like that, then often I'll call them up and congratulate them and say, that's a really cool thing that you did, and they appreciate that. And it's those sorts of activities that help us have a good, close relationship with our pilot community. Also, the pilot registration fee, again, supports the search and rescue program with state police. And these are ongoing programs. The pilot community in general doesn't have a problem with it, except that what I've heard their problem with it is that there's an awful lot of people out there that aren't compliant with the regulation. I can also tell you that I talked to the legislative vice president of the Oregon Pilots Association last night, and he felt pretty strongly that they support this program, they support this bill, and that they really don't have a problem with the pilot registration program. Any other form for increasing or replacing the fees that we gather from the pilot registration program, they would have a problem with. They thought that increasing the fuel taxes would be onerous to the pilot community, or even increasing the aircraft registration fee, which is higher, would be onerous. That, you know, they're paying $8 a year for pilot registration was reasonable and people didn't have a problem with that. So that's the feedback that I've gotten.
And you need to point out that less than 20% of the pilots are actually a member of the Pilots Association. Isn't that correct?
Senator George, the Oregon Pilots Association told me they have 1,800 members, so that's probably in that ballpark.
Okay. And the point being is that we have pilots, and you all heard me mention, for example, my son who's a commercial pilot in Texas, received all of the stuff from Oregon asking, you know, him to respond. And it's just very irritating. And he's not the only one that I've heard that from, that, you know, I'm not active right now. You know, I don't want to be bothered by this. And the other thing is everyone realizes that we're sending out all these mailers to collect $8. Now, one of the other issues I'd like everyone to think about is right now you have how much in that account you mentioned a few minutes ago for the search and rescue?
I think we have about $103,000.
$103,000, and then we're going to spend $100,000 basically for the computer program that was going to track the folks as far as their participation in this issue. We talked yesterday in the meeting with Representative Johnson and with Vice Chair Harper, who, of course, is a pilot also, along the idea of is there off-the-shelf programs that would be available? Because the thought being is that you know, none of us would spend $100,000 to track 10,000 items. You just wouldn't do that. You'd buy it for $150. But the thing about it is that you have then, with those two items, enough to fund that program for almost 3 years. You know, if you took the $100,000 with what you have, you're going to end up with at least 2 years of money that could then go to search and rescue. The thought being is that do we? Correct. Let's get the numbers straight then.
Mr. Chair, we transfer. Maybe about 2 years. We transfer almost $100,000 per biennium to search and rescue. So if we've got a per biennium, so if we have $100,000 in the account, then that's a biennium.
Okay. Plus, what I was suggesting though was that if you don't track all of this stuff, you don't need the $100,000 program. There's another $100,000 that you're going to take out of your operating fund. Not correct. All right. Lori's shaking her head.
Chair George, only not correct in the fact that the full $100,000 for this system was not going to come out of the search and rescue piece. Half of it was going to come out of search and rescue, half of it was the aircraft registration piece, which is an operations program. So it's not, the search and rescue program was not going to take the full hit for the cost of the, that was the only.
But how long have we gotten, how long have we been operating with the existing system? For how many years? Clear back well into ODOT and beyond.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, approaching 20 years.
Approaching 20 years, okay. And we're going to reduce by, if we get our bill passed, we're going to reduce your workload per year by down to only one-third because of the, it's going to be a three-year registration for both pilot and aircraft, correct?
With Senate Bill 687 and 688, correct.
So the thought being is that your annual workload is one-third of what it would have been, and if, in fact, you backed out pilots, literally relied upon the FAA's database, there would, in fact, only be the tracking of the aircraft would be all that would be done, and only one-third of the workload per year. Okay. Senator Dukes?
Lori, have you talked internally at DAS about the $100,000?
Chair George, actually we have somebody from IRMD today to speak more to you about the ABS. There has been some additional work completed since we initially had public hearings on the agency's budget, so if you'd like them to come up and speak to that, they could do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I could understand, Mr. Chair, if when they first did the budget, they really didn't know what it was they were going to have, and they just plugged it into it.
Right.
Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sean McSpaden. I work for Department of Administrative Services for the Information Resources Management Division. Be glad to talk about the work that's been done so far and certainly answer any questions that you might have. How would you like me to proceed?
Well, let's just deal with that. Sean, if in fact we eliminated the tracking of the 10,000 pilots and you were just tracking the aircraft, we're talking about then only one-third of those aircraft are going to be dealt with every year. How long do you think the current system could, in fact, function?
Senator George, members of the committee, the current system is on its last legs. The current system has crashed several times over the last year. In fact, it was just moved from the single PC that it was residing on onto a server as a backup copy, and the current system, hardware failed completely. And so if we hadn't taken that action, the current aircraft and pilot registration system would have been lost. So it is a system that must be replaced, assuming that the Department of Aviation is going to continue to register pilots and aircraft.
Senator Dukes.
My recollection is that aviation's portion was one piece of a bigger data collection system that was going to be put together. But $100,000 for a data entry program?
Chair George, Senator Dukes, you are correct. Over the last year or so, we've been working with several of the boards and commissions and the Department of Aviation to explore the possibility of an enterprise licensing application. We Just recently, Director Weeks and Mike Fries, the acting CIO, made a decision based on budget that an enterprise system would be at least 3 years out. And so based on the current situation with the Department of Aviation and with the other two partners in the enterprise project, that the Board of Pharmacy and the Health Licensing Office, and their current needs for system replacement, it's been determined that we're going to proceed with basically individual efforts for each one of those boards and commissions.
Considering, I can't imagine that they have anything where they would share data, that will probably work fine for them. But what will you do in its place? The piece that always staggers me is when DAS comes in, I can remember budgets a couple of years ago, it was $10,000 for our website. And now it's, with the other two agencies also, was there $100,000 in each of their budgets?
Chair George, Senator Dukes, there are different amounts in each one of the budgets. At this point, I do not, but I can get those exact numbers for the committee.
Assuming we've got at least a couple $100,000 between the three of them, I don't think there's a person in this room who would pay that kind of money for that kind of a system. And I think what we're looking for is something that meets the minimum needs with lots of room for expansion so that it's not out of date. It seems to me that whenever DAS comes to us with IT, it's always incredibly expensive. And I don't know what it is that DAS does that makes it that expensive. But I don't think business would pay that kind of money for a data collection system that they can manipulate.
If I could respond, Senator George and Senator Dukes, in fact, with the enterprise licensing project, we did some extensive research across the nation. We contacted or issued what's called a request for information from the vendor community. And for the enterprise licensing application project, a system that would be scalable for the enterprise was, and there were wide-ranging estimates, but we estimate it would be over a three-year period a cost of $1.8 to $3 million for the enterprise. We have 40-plus boards and commissions across Oregon state government that license or register in some way, shape, or form. And so each of the agencies by statute, each of the agencies by business practice and administrative rule tend to have some different requirements. For instance, the Department of Aviation, as has been mentioned at this point, does not have a compliance or enforcement arm. Many of the boards and commissions, because they deal in the health professions, et cetera, do have a very active inspection program, very active compliance program. They go through the full administrative hearing process in addition to licensing both individuals and establishments. And so we've taken great care to identify the core requirements of each of the partner agencies in the enterprise project, and certainly would need to do that in the future with the other boards and commissions should they be able to use the system that we're able to put in place in the next few years. But at this point, the Department of Aviation has specific requirements not only for registration of aircraft and of pilots, but also has a real need that is currently unmet with the current failing system for financial management. Currently, miscellaneous revenues, basically all revenues for the pilot and registration program, some miscellaneous fuel taxes, land lease items are tracked via spreadsheet. There is really no ability for the agency to generate an accurate and consolidated deposit on a daily basis, nor the ability to, in an automated way, reconcile financial transactions with the SFMS reports that come back to the agency. So, in essence, the department is limited in its ability to manage the cash that comes in through these variety of programs.
You certainly can.
Did anyone in DAS look to see whether there was a program out there somewhere that would meet their needs or could be made to meet their needs without creating a new system?
Chair Dukes, or excuse me, Chair George, Senator Dukes, we have looked. The request for information for the Enterprise Project serves as the basis for just the general lay of the land in the vendor community. The vendors who responded, their products were much more cost prohibitive than this systems development path that we're planning for the Department of Aviation. What we're recommending is that because of the work that's already been done, we're halfway through the traditional systems development lifecycle process. We've already defined the Department of Aviation's requirements. We've developed a conceptual design, and that basically is all of the screenshots that Department of Aviation staff would see, and potentially that pilots and people registering aircraft would see. What we have left are the detailed design pieces to investigate this 20-year-old program that has, I don't want to get too technical, but has what's called macros. These are, in essence, poor man's programming. There are 300 plus different business processes that are, strewn throughout this system that need to be investigated. Once we complete that work, that's about a 3-month effort. Once we complete that work, we'll be able to code, test, and implement the system. And so that's what's left in the development cycle. And IRMD feels that the policy option package total amount is reasonable for completing that work at this point, based on our research of the vendor community, based on the time it would take to do a competitive procurement. This would not be a sole source type of procurement, and so we would need to go through the full procurement process. And so we believe that the quickest path to replace this aging system at this point is the internal development process, and the least costly at this point.
Sean, I want you to follow. I would need to get to Representative Krieger and then Representative Smith. But a few years ago, we decided that we would find out whether or not we could market hazelnuts direct. So we put together a little website, and it was very cute. People commented they thought it was just adorable. And we had pictures of filter trees and all this sort of stuff. And you could go on our little website, and you could order little bags or big bags or whatever you wanted. And we contacted the bank, and they said, sure, no problem. You can receive credit cards. We'll take Visa, MasterCard, all this sort of stuff for this minuscule little fee. And so within a matter of a month, we had this thing up and operating. Okay? Now, the total cost was $1,000, maybe. I doubt it was that much money. Explain to me why we cannot use the privates, you know, the banks, to take the fees, to collect the monies. I mean, do we do that at all? Because, you know, as Senator Dukes has said, we watch these budgets and thinking, my gosh, that ledger would be way cheaper to operate. A fixed ledger, a piece of paper I open up like this and write numbers on it, would be cheaper than what we're doing now. And if, in fact, it crashed, the worst thing we could do is grab it and run out of the room because it was burning, because it wouldn't crash any other way. You know, it wasn't going to go down. Explain to me why this is working. Because I sit here and watch this whole thing, and I'm thinking, I don't think this is working. We were supposed to reduce FTE. I haven't seen any. We are adding FTE. We how many departments have we seen with massive, you know, tech service folks in the budgets? But I mean, relative to what we did, for example, let me give you another one. We have a tracking program that was provided to us for $150. Senator Morris, wasn't that $150 we paid for that? Tracks 100,000 constituents. We can write in all kinds of information, and we can bring it up on subjects and stuff like this. Why in the world with 100,000 transactions? Well, that's not even transactions. That's just the base unit. Then we have transactions underneath that, so subdivided. It's millions of potential for $150. Why would this thing cost $100,000 to do such a simple tracking operation? Well, we'll be here the rest of the year with this question, but anyway.
Senator George, I think there were two questions.
More than that, but that's all right. Go ahead.
In particular, one had to do, your first had to do with what we term electronic commerce, the ability to accept payment via the Internet. That piece is being provided by the electronic government program. There are pilot projects underway for the motor carrier weight mile tax, the SOS Blue Book sales, and I believe one or two other programs that are currently accepting payment via the internet. We are working through the e-government program with private sector banks and the Oregon State Treasury and the State Controller's Division to make sure that the transaction is reconciled correctly and the money is banked correctly. And so from that piece, this would not be duplicated in the Department of Aviation system. We would leverage existing work that's already been done to provide the front end to an internal Department of Aviation system. So in regard to your second question, the only thing I can respond to is that the requirements that we have gathered from the Department of Aviation that are mandatory and are highly desired in some cases where if we can build in cost-effectively additional functionality, we would do that. But the core mandatory requirements lead us to estimate a system development process that would reasonably be able to be accomplished in the policy option packages that have been requested.
Representative Krieger.
Mr. Chair, I have a couple questions. Maybe for Laurie. There's unregistered pilots, there's unlicensed pilots. Do we have unlicensed pilots flying routinely in Oregon?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, that is a very difficult one to track, and I don't know, except that I can tell you that if there are unlicensed pilots flying, that's a federal function, and the Federal Aviation Administration enforces the compliance with that. They're the entity that licenses pilots.
Do they do that actively on these small little airports for people flying in and out of private little strips and out of some farmer's backyard? And the guy teaches his son how to fly, but never gets around to...
Right. Chair George, Representative Krieger, no, the FAA doesn't have a proactive program to inspect pilots and make sure they are licensed. Instead, it's a little bit more like we're familiar with the DMV. They have a process whereby you can apply for your license and take the tests and get it. And other than that, if somebody reports a pilot flying without a license or in some other sort of coincidental inspection they find that, then that's when they take action. But they don't actively seek out unlicensed pilots.
The fact that we have all these unregistered planes, unregistered pilots, within that you're going to find a few unlicensed people, I believe. What liability is there of not having an active program to correct that when you allow those people to fly into public airports?
Chair George, Representative Krieger, I would, I think, correct that and say that of our unregistered aircraft and unregistered pilots that we know about, that group wouldn't include any unlicensed pilots because all we've done is taken the licensed pilots and subtract the registered pilots from that. So the licensed pilots would then be another group beyond that that we don't even have a means to quantify. So that's getting to who they are. I personally think that the liability for having unlicensed pilots out there would be on the FAA. That's a federal responsibility. We do work with them very closely on safety issues, but actually inspecting and finding a way to track those kinds of people isn't one of the issues that we've discussed.
It seemed to me like if all of these people, though, were out of the pool of who they're looking for because they were registered and the planes were registered, it kind of cuts down who they'd be looking at to find out who might be unlicensed if there were any.
Well, I think the FAA, we heard a few years ago, we were looking at some land use changes relative to the use of airports, that the FAA comes in really quickly and points out to the state that you don't have jurisdiction. Sorry. We control the airports, we control the airspace, we control the pilots, and we control the aircraft in numbers. And so they probably, unless they saw a substantial problem with people crashing airplanes into buildings or in just crashing airplanes in general, who in fact were not licensed pilots, I doubt you'd see any movement on in that area. Because it's the same way when you're driving down the highway, you have no idea who has a driver's license and who doesn't. And we have a very extensive tracking system, which in fact we do have the authority to license and remove license. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair George. Obviously, there's been some tough questions asked today. I'd be very interested in seeing a demo or a sample of what a $100,000 software package looks like. Would it be possible to have that brought to our committee?
It's a box
with a disc.
Chair, put your head your ledger in it.
Chair George, Representative Smith. In terms of an aviation-specific system, we would certainly be willing to and very ready to come back to the committee and to show the committee the conceptual design of the system. And once the system is built, certainly would be very pleased to demonstrate that particular system. In regard to what a licensing system does that's available in the private sector, certainly we could arrange a vendor-specific type of demonstration for the committee if that's your wish. But in terms of the Department of Aviation system, that would basically be the limitations that we would have at this point in time since it's not developed.
Chair George, you can obviously imagine the angst of trying to imagine what a $100,000 system looks like. And so if for me, for myself and for me to cast an aye vote, I need some help conceptually seeing what this would look like.
Sean, help me to understand this, and we need to get Senator Morrison back to Representative Hansen. What stops us? Because I know what programs that I have. What stops us from going to buying those and paying the fees? We do anyway because they check our computers in the Capitol every year to make sure that fees are paid. What stops us from using that sort of equipment?
Senator George, I'd like to clarify, are you asking the existing systems that we have in place in the state, what stops another agency from utilizing that system, or could you rephrase your question?
I get a hold of Dell and we order a new computer, and it has some programs that are probably completely capable of tracking this few transactions. It can also put together a spreadsheet for me. It can assemble it. It can track the numbers. It can do all those sort of things. All I need to do is pay a fee, correct, if I'm government, for the use of those programs?
Senator George, if you're referring to the standard Microsoft Excel product or a Microsoft Access product, yes, that's all you would need to do is purchase the Microsoft Office Suite license, and then staff would need to then create either spreadsheets or create a database that was capable of tracking this system. And so the effectiveness of that would depend on the skill of the staff at the Department of Aviation, and or if they needed additional help, they would need to purchase those services, which in essence is what the Department of Aviation is proposing to do with the IRMD system development consulting effort. They would, in essence, take tools more sophisticated than the standard Microsoft Office Suite, but tools nonetheless. They would take tools and develop a custom system for the Department of Aviation. If I could make one point, part of the issue or problem in the past with the current Department of Aviation system is that they only have one staff person that knows how the current system runs. If that staff person leaves and the system has some sort of problem, there really is no other Department of Aviation staff person that could recover the system or correct any errors that occurred. And so that's part of the reason that a defined system development effort with documentation on how a system is built is preferred and recommended.
Senator Morris, then. Representative Hansen.
Thank you. I have several questions.
Oh, several questions.
Mr. Chair, thank you.
Do other states, or do all the other states register aircraft? Or is, when I asked the question earlier, I think we were talking about pilots. How about aircraft with other states?
Mm-hmm. Chair George, Senator Morse, I'm sorry that I don't have the specific numbers with me, but I can tell you that most states have some sort of aircraft registration program, and in some cases it's more property tax, you know, luxury tax or something like that. But there's some sort of system of identifying aircraft and collecting revenue based on that aircraft. So whether it's a tax or a registration system or something, that is very, very common, and that's what most states do operate. And typically that is a means of collecting revenue.
Thank you. This is a crazy idea. Okay, it just shifts the paradigm 180 degrees. We have funds available here. We have a two-year cycle. What would happen in your mind if you created, given it some kind of title, call it the Search and Rescue Association, and it's a voluntary membership. Make it $50 every 3 years. And specifically, those funds drop right straight into search and rescue functions and make it voluntary. Your pilot, Chairman George, would people pay for that service on an association basis as opposed to, a hammer $500 penalty basis, and then just use the FAA list and develop an association membership and search and rescue?
Chair George, Senator Morse, I'm really unprepared to comment on that, your paradigm shift that quickly. I do have another guest with me today who is George Kleinbaum, the manager of the Search and Rescue Program for Oregon Emergency Management Division of State Police, and so I'm sure that he would be interested in participating in discussions about that, as well as the pilot community and probably some other groups too, because I think it's important to point out that the Search and Rescue Program that's funded by this fee does more than search for downed pilots. A lot of their searches are for hikers or mountain climbers, mushroom pickers, any kind of search and rescue activities that go on that are done with aviation equipment is funded by this program. So it's not just for the benefit of pilots.
Yes. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would be derelict in my duty if I did not explain that we're not a policy committee and that's a policy issue that would have to be reviewed and discussed in another committee, and that we are looking at this House Bill 2173 in relationship to the fiscal impact for this budget. And any amendments or changes to this would have to be approved by the substantive committee that reviewed the bill on the House side and the Senate side before the Ways and Means could proceed. So,
Senator Boyce, since I'm a new member, I can ask the dumb question.
Yeah, well, okay. That's perfectly fine.
If we just defund it, is there any prohibition from the agency on their own without any policy changes or statutes to create a voluntary fund for search and rescue?
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the current law requires that the money that is collected, the way you would defund it is you would eliminate the position probably in aviation that's collecting the revenue. If pilots send in their registration and fee voluntarily, they would be collecting this pool of money that would be transferred over to search and rescue, which is in the Department of State Police. For as a revenue transfer, the expenditure limitation is in the state police budget for those activities. So you could defund it. We could stop searching for lost people and lost airplanes, which is what they would have to do unless they found other funding sources for that program.
I'll leave it up.
All right.
If it's a dumb idea, we'll just say it's dumb and move on.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just kind of where I'm coming on this issue, I'm amazingly comfortable with a lot of this budget. I think I'm probably swimming upstream. But I look at the compliance issue as really a question of fairness. We collect a great deal of money virtually from the public to support general aviation through the jet fuel tax at the Portland Airport. I voted for that, even though that's not really coming from the base of the people that are going to be benefiting, but from airport development. But I think it's good for the state. We're asking the pilots and the aircraft owners to contribute a little bit of money. If we've got, I don't know what, 70-80% compliance, it seems to me the other 20%, we're not asking them for a lot. We're asking them to register their airplanes, and we're asking them to pay $8 a year. And the benefits they get for that are some search and rescue activities, if they would happen to need that. And they also get improvements for airports throughout the state. I don't think it's too much to ask them to contribute this little amount. And if you're asking for most of them to do it, and most of them comply, I think the people that choose not to comply, we should be able to have a little bit of leverage over them to get them to be with the program that they're going to be benefiting pretty directly for. So it's either if we're going to be asking people to be doing this activity, and most of them are doing it, I think we've got a responsibility to be diligent in trying to collect from the ones that choose not to. In terms of the computers, this is an area that I don't have a lot of expertise. I'll make a real dumb plumbing analogy that sort of fits with the Filbert analogy. But we can...
Did you have a website, too?
No. But you can... There's a lot of relatively simple, basic plumbing tasks that you can do without much money. I mean, I can string some pipe and put a hose bib in my backyard and stuff, or I could go out to a farm and string some hose bibs around the barnyard and stuff like that, and probably do it in an hour and a half with plastic pipe, and it would be a system. And it might meet the general purposes, but it wouldn't really be a water system.
You sound like my last plumber.
You can do it on the cheap, but it's not going to be really a developed water system that is going to meet a lot of needs. It wouldn't be a water system. It would be some strung pipe and a hose bib with a hose bib on the end of it. I think we'd do the same thing with computers. I mean, we could have the staff pick up some computers, some pretty serious computers at Computer City, or order them from Dell. If you had somebody with a lot of skill on the staff, they could probably patch a system together that would meet most of the needs of the agency, but it still wouldn't meet state accounting standards for how we're going to be tracking money. It might not be compatible with other state systems if we're moving the people around that are, if the one person that designed it moves on to another area, you're in trouble. You don't have the interface between the data that you're collecting for pilot registration versus the money accounting spreadsheet. So, if you figure what it would cost in terms of an aviation employee to work for 6 months or whatever to help put a system like that together, I think by the end you might not have 100,000, but you might have a big chunk of that same 100,000 invested by the time you figure the labor involved in putting it together, the cost of buying some different components compared to a real system that's integral to the state, that meets the accounting needs of the agency as well as all of the other needs that they're getting here, and has room to grow and is compatible for tracking dollars. And when we're talking about state dollars, it's different than if it's our own business or something, and we're putting in a system that we might feel comfortable with, but isn't necessarily a system that the Treasury, Department of Revenue, and everybody else can feel comfortable with. So I don't know. I've got a lot less heartburn on this than I think other people. When we see the incredible amounts of money that we spend on technology, it's pretty scary. But I think probably we're getting our money's worth. And then again, when we're looking at a system, the old system lasted for 20 years. How, if we're investing $100,000 in a system, I'm assuming that's a system that lasts for a long period of time compared to the system that I buy for my campaign that I replace every 2 years or 4 years because it's got some building obsolescence or... Anyway, I feel I'm swimming upstream on this, but I think I needed to put it on the record.
And I want to express to you that what you're seeing here relative to this issue of computers is just, this is one we can actually look at that's in reasonable numbers. You're just the guinea pig here because of the frustration that exists in this building. When we started off, and you remember the whole thing with the DMV computers. And we're going along, and all of a sudden we get a Secretary of State report that says it's going to be $123.9 million. Wait a minute. We intended to spend $10 million. And so the concern is that this just seems to be an ongoing thing, and you just happen to be the person that allowed us to ask some questions. And, Sean, we'll probably want to talk to you further because I still would like to get some answers to why this is so unbelievably expensive and complex. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2173. And we're going to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 5504, the Department of Aviation Fee Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The fee bill has had a public hearing in this committee once before. These are the fees that allow aircraft to access aviation facilities that the department collects during the interim. Board of Aviation held public hearings around the state, had administrative rule process, and determined that they wanted to change the mechanism that they are collecting fees to make it a little more sound. And it passed adopted an administrative rule that put into place monthly fees that range between $10 and $12, the monthly fees are in the bill that is in front of you via the Classic Airport.
Did you get the bill?
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Steph, did you
should have this.
Yes, Chair George.
Yes. Sorry, we'll get that to you in a second.
Explain to me the rationale of doing the fee bill prior to doing the budget bill.
Back to
uses. Mr. Chair, the fee bill is incorporated into the department's budget, and this is not a lot of revenue. It's $14,244 just as a result of smoothing out the fees that they charge for aircraft to collectors, and a particular reason to do it one before the others. Just
I guess when I read that, Chair George, it's with the assumption that the budget bill is going to be passed and that the fee income then is therefore needed to pay for the assumed passage of
now,
a budget
Mr.
bill.
Mr. Chair, Senator Representative Smith, what happens if you don't pass this bill ratifying these fees? It goes back to the methodology that they were using prior to this point, which is to charge by class of airport rather than class of aircraft. And the the rationale for the new fee base is based on the weight of the airplane, and that has more of an impact on the pavement that the airplane is crossing than the kind of airport that they are flying into. So it's, you're collecting relatively the same amount of revenues, just a little bit better or a way to collect it for the users that are actually burning up the pavement. So. Thank you.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
You've got to remember, though, you know, a mile of road gets you 5,280 feet. A mile of runway gets you anywhere in the world.
So that's what you would be. What you're doing is you're ratifying the fees that the Board of Aviation adopted during the interim when you pass this bill. And I recommend approval of it. So when you want to go into work session mm-hmm. on it.
Right. Okay. Well, everyone knows where we are. Any further discussion relative to this?
Are we in work session?
No, we're not.
No.
Right. You want to move to work session? Let's do that. Okay. We're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 5504, and with tap of the gavel, we'll be opening a work session on Senate Bill 5504, Department of Aviation Fee Bill. Representative Smith.
Now that these are the numbers that are being presented to us, I just have a list of questions going through the expenditure detail worksheet that was provided to us. And how many employees do you folks have?
Mr. Chair, this is the budget bill. This references the budget bill, but if this fee bill, if you have questions about that in relationship to this, that.
Chair George, I fully support this department and the work they do, but I do not feel comfortable passing a fee bill until I know the components of the budget. And so I guess, I mean, I can hold my questions and be a no vote on the fee mm-hmm. bill, or I can ask my budget questions now so I feel comfortable knowing the increases, what they're going to be applied towards.
You proceed right now.
I mean, I do support the department. I just want to know what I'm voting on.
Okay.
Thank you.
Chair apparently has authority.
And how many employees do you folks have?
Chair George, Representative Smith, we have 16 employees.
Can I just kind of go down through the list of questions I have?
Yes.
Thank you. Can you share with us what are flexible benefits, and why did those increase from $191,000 to $255,000?
Chair George, Representative says flex benefits are generally health benefits, and they are increasing directly as a result of the increased cost of medical benefits.
Can I just ask
yes.
my question?
No, yes, just go right straight through.
Overtime payments of $36,800, looking for $38,000.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry to interrupt. I just thought that it might be helpful to explain to the committee what it is that you're looking at before.
I'm sorry. Yeah, let me do that again. It's the expenditure detail.
Right. What I did was I prepared a summary of the total budget for the subcommittee for the work session when we get into the budget. The first page shows the summary of 99-101 actuals, what was adopted by the legislature in 2103, the governor's balance budget, and then the last column on the first page will be my recommendation when we get to that, and the second page follows that. Only this first page shows revenues and the major program areas in total summarized with an ending balance, and the second page is a summary of the revenues and the expenditure categories by personal services, services and supplies, capital outlay, special payments for the whole department. Then the last sheet is the detail for those categories, personal services, services and supplies, capital outlay, special payments, and then debt service. For the governor's budget, it doesn't have the LFO recommendations in there in the detail.
Representative Smith, if I were following you, correctly, you're on 3 of 4, and you were top under personal services.
Correct. I'm just going through this. And by the way, I do applaud the fact that this information is being presented like this, because it makes it very easy for us to kind of go line item by line item through. I think the question I was at was talking about overtime and the need for $38,000 of overtime and how the staffing decision is made to to pay overtime versus managing the 40-hour work week perhaps more efficiently.
Right. Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, there are a couple of instances when the use of overtime is really necessary. I do have to point out that the management team is very aggressive about monitoring the use of overtime and budgeting for it only in those cases where it's necessary. Most of it comes from our airport's maintenance section. And they work some overtime hours in the summertime when grass is growing and when they have to do mowing and herbicide applications and things like that. It's much more efficient for us for them when they're on an airport doing some of that work to continue working through until the job is done rather than to drive back home and then back out to the site in between. There are also times when other members of the staff use overtime because our headquarters is in Salem, but we provide services on a statewide basis. There are times when we need to go to city council meetings or public hearings or planning sessions or something like that, places all over the state. So sometimes those are evening meetings and sometimes they are daytime meetings. If they're evening meetings in Salem, we can often compensate for those by, having them come in late that day or something like that. But if they're in some other part of the state, then we've got to transport people there and then have the meeting and then transport them back. So we do our best to manage the overtime so that it's minimized as much as possible. But those are the types of instances where we just can't escape it.
Another question. On the employee training, it looks like about 125% increase from the 2001 to the 2003 number from 12,000 to 26,000. Talk to us about what the need is to more than double the need, the dollars for training.
Mr. Chair and Representative Smith, we have been experiencing a huge amount of employee turnover in the last year, and it's continuing. In the last 12 months, we have turned over probably about a third of our staff, and there are still people leaving and still new recruitments being done. You are absolutely right in showing that we have had to do a tremendous amount of training, not only for new employees, but to cross-train existing employees so that we have some depth and to just try to keep our business functions going.
Follow-up. The employee turnover, that's a result of?
Chair George and Representative Smith, mostly retirements, and we were seeing some in the last year anyway because we have a small staff that a lot of them have been there for a long time. In more recent months now, fears about changes to the PERS system has caused more people to leave. We've also had more recently, I think, some people who are not retirement age who have left to seek promotional opportunities because that's the way that they can get salary increases at this point. So we will expect to see those kinds of changes, I think.
Follow up. Under state government service charges, it goes from $115,000 to $183,000. I don't understand what state government service charges are. And then, two, what's the rationale for the large increase?
Chair George, Representative Smith. State government service charges are charges generally assessed and distributed centrally through DAS. They include charges for the Department of Administrative Services, Secretary of State, and a variety of charges. I do not have the price list for aviation with me today, but I could bring that to you, and you could see each line item that's budgeted. The reason it fluctuates so much is it's based on actual anticipated costs related to those activities, and those do fluctuate from biennium to biennium. So I can give you that list tomorrow. There will be some adjustments to those numbers based on adjustments to the Department of Administrative Services budget. So that's a number that's still in flux.
So what would be the impact to the Department of Aviation if we said, no, we're not going to raise it to 183, we're going to hold it at 115?
Chair George, Representative Smith, that would directly affect the agencies those dollars go to. And I don't have the exact list. We could bring it, and you could see exactly how much is going where.
Chair George, I'd be very interested in knowing what our $183,000 buys us from DAS.
Okay. We had for Senate Bill 5503, we had a possible work session, and what we can do is we can hold that over.
Yes.
Back when we get to it. Okay.
Yes.
Hope it's okay. I just want to know what I'm voting on.
This is why we're here.
Okay.
Now you're doing what's appropriate. I want to remind everyone that we're talking about the fee bill on 5504. Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 4300 line, the professional services. We may have discussed that, but it escapes me what that is. Services and supplies.
Mm-hmm. Chair George, Senator Morris, that is the line item where all of our contract professional services falls under. For the most part for us, that is engineering consultants that we hire to do airport development projects. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Chair George, Senator Morse, we're having a little discussion here because I'm guessing that your question is why did it go from $9 million to $3 million? And the reason is because we have a big program that I think we've talked about, the Non-Primary Airport Entitlement Program, which is a federal grant program that the FAA has asked us to help them administer. In the 2001-03 budget, the federal funds that passed through our agency for that program were included in this line item, and that is a $6 million program. In the 2003-05 request, we're requesting a separate place to put that program, and so that's where the $6 million difference is.
Directions that we have been given were to assume no increases, steps, or salaries. And I'm not sure that's reflected in the
Mr. Chair, it is not. That's the governor's balanced budget line, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. those numbers are still included in that number. What you don't have is the LFO recommendation with those numbers taken out of the line item.
I received two copies of this. Did I miss one of your LFO recommendations?
No, I have not.
You've not handed them out.
I did not do a LFO recommendation on this column because I haven't entered those yet. Usually we wouldn't do that until after the work session, but Senator Dukes has asked for that information, and I will work on that this afternoon and get it for you tomorrow to give you a reflection of that. I might add that this summary page is kind of an experiment because this is the first work session for the budget for this committee, and I don't know that will work for the larger departments as easily. We can get this kind of summary information for the committee, but putting the detail in may not be as we may not be able to turn it around fast enough is what I'm trying to say, but we'll work on that.
Representative Smith and back to Senator Dukes.
I have to tell you, you're my hero, presenting this information the way you've presented it.
Mr. Chair, I can't take credit. because Robin Lamont met with Senator Morrison and Representative Smith, this is the result of that, and I got pulled in to work on it with you. So I would like to give her the credit.
I'm sorry, that sucked in. Question I have is, under publicity and publications, what's the rationale for a 1,000% increase? From 12,000 to 117,000.
Yeah, Chair George, Representative Smith, I don't know. Let me get the answer to that question. I'll get back to you.
Thank you.
Senator Dukes. Yeah. Remind everyone that we're supposed to be talking about Senate Bill 5504, which is the fee bill, and we've broadened it a little bit, but just want to remind everyone.
And now that you said that, I was going to say, Mr. Chair, I really like this format, but the second page in all of them, I'm going to want LFO's recommendation. I still struggle with the fact that we have the governor's balanced budget, we have the governor's rebalanced budget, and we have the co-chair's budget. And so it's easier for me. It would be easier for me to work off of the co-chair's budget because I have a pretty decent understanding of that. But I'm happy to work off of LFO's recommendations if everything going all the way through, all of the information we're given, is the same from the same source, so that I can go add things up and they I got a half a shot that they'll come out even with my math.
We'll work on that.
But since we're in work session, Mr. Chair, I would be happy to move the bill, but I don't know if that's what you want to do now or
stop questions.
Oh, you still have a question?
That was my sense, was that we had a member who wasn't quite there yet.
Okay.
I just think there's a lot of questions to ask, and this is just to be very candid to the committee, this is the first time I've had financials where I'm able to go through and see what is being spent. And mm-hmm. So if it's okay, I just have a few more questions.
Certainly. We
Mr.
can
Chair,
close the work session on this and go ahead and open up a
yes.
public hearing on 5503.
Yes, Mr. Chair, we can do that.
Mr. Chair, then you have to come back if we decide we want to move the fee bill.
That's correct. We can carry it over, and we can do that tomorrow as well.
Spend the rest of the week on it?
Well, no, aren't we scheduled the rest of the week on aviation?
Really?
Yes.
Yes, we did put that in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
that's
going.
No, don't worry. Six is coming quick.
On the other hand, we could have one day off if we got it done sooner.
Correct. We could finish this up tomorrow.
Ah.
Remember, this is a small budget.
I can get this format with ODOT and economic development, we'll have a heyday.
Okay.
No, it's okay. we'll see if we get the other two pieces lined up, too. That may be quite a complexity, but we'll try to do it. Are we okay? I'm just going to ask the committee, are we okay with closing the work session on this with the idea that we'll be reopening it later after we have had a complete public hearing and understand 5503? Okay. I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 5504, and I'm going to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 5503. Back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, you have a packet that's paper clipped together here with a summary on the front of the department's budget. And as I already explained, this front page is the revenues, the funding sources, major funding sources for the agency's budget. The difference between the governor's balanced budget and the LFO recommended budget on the funding sources is the certificates of participation that the agency had requested in the governor's budget to fund their building improvements. I am not recommending the agency has withdrawn the request for building that, and therefore the COPs would go away, so there is a reduction in the revenue line as well. Then the major programs, operations, search and rescue, GA, operations, the governor's budget, the LFO recommended budget removes the merit increases, inflation, and some other technical adjustments.
Should we mention at this point the relative to those COPs in the new building that there's $140,000 in there for the...
No, I will get to that.
I will.
I just wanted to point out that what the differences are in the numbers are generally the technical adjustments and the result of recommendations on policy packages that I made that I will detail for you in a little bit or after you ask all your questions about the detail in the governor's budget here. And then the ending balance of $1.3 million, the difference between the governor's ending balance and LFO is the reductions that are being taken in the agency's budget will go back into the agency's standing balance. Just stays with the agency until the money is spent in a way. The second page just brings it down to the personal services, services and supplies, capital outlay, special payments, debt service level, and then you have the detail for personal services, services and supplies at the governor's balanced budget level. Do you want to continue with your questions on this before I go into this so that, because I'm not going to have the LFO recommended until tomorrow on that, on the detail part. If
Senator Dukes,
the point.
Yeah, if you're comfortable with that, Senator Dukes.
Because what you'd be asking are questions about what the agency has requested at this up to this point using these numbers.
Okay. Except I don't know if ending balance fits in there, but
okay.
For a 16-person agency company, $1.3 million seems like a large ending balance. Is that about normal? Is that large?
That is more than they would need. In the governor's balanced budget, their ending balance of $965,000, if you go back to the first page, is about 6 months of operations. And they what they've done to calculate that, they took out their professional services, which is the engineering consultant work that's being done on their projects, and the capital outlay, which wouldn't be needed in a pure operating sense, just for cash flow purposes. So what we've done by reducing their budget in other categories is we've increased that amount. So what can happen with, to bring that back down into the, to a more reasonable operating cash flow level would be to either put it back into projects, allow the department to do more T-hangers, build more T-hangers, do more improvements, pavement maintenance, if they have. Well, I know they have projects that they could put it on, so that's the committee's purview.
It seems like there's about $400,000 that we could put into projects, but then I guess I would have to ask the agency, can they handle more projects given staffing and all of that?
And when we get through the LFO has recommended some increases in those areas, you could increase that even more. You do need to make a decision and talk about the ending balance, because the co-chairs have asked that each of the subcommittees look at those ending balances and determine whether or not that's a candidate for transferring either to the general fund or putting back into, driving it back into the agency for more work. And in that respect,
more projects, more jobs.
More projects, more jobs, exactly.
Did they give Chair George, did they give...
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair George. Did they give parameters on the ending balance of what they'd like to see? Because $1.3 million represents about 2 months' reserves. Did they give what they're looking for?
Mr. Chair, every agency has a little bit different operating requirements, and it depends on the cash flow of the agency. In an agency that's receiving its cash on a regular basis, a two-month operating cash flow, you know, ending balance would be adequate. And in some cases where they have peaks of, you know, revenues coming in at certain times during the year, then they might need a little bit longer ending balance. So it's up to the committee with your able LFO analyst assistance to determine whether or not that is an adequate ending balance for the agency. And in this case, 6 months might be a little bit more than they need, except that throughout the biennium, they have projects that come up that require a match, and their ending balance then would serve as that match for the projects that the FAA approves somewhere later in the biennium. And they run about between $100,000 and $200,000 in match the last years or so in those kind of projects. So you'd want to make sure that there was about that kind of a cushion there for the projects that come up later on.
Follow-up question, Representative Smith.
It's actually not a follow-up. I need to digress, but can I just ask you a question?
No, you're going to go back to the line of question before. That's fine.
Okay.
We're going to need to leave you in just a few minutes, though.
Okay.
You need to do too?
The question I have is, under employee recruitment and development, we've reduced that from 2748 down to 2043. And so, and yet we're increasing employee training from 12,000 to 26,000. Would it make more sense to increase our employee recruitment and development and hire a higher quality person that needs less training?
Okay. Chair George, Representative Smith, this line item is where we put the cost to place ads in newspapers to advertise for recruitments. This doesn't really have anything to do with the classification that employee is in and our ability to hire a quality employee. This is just purely advertising the position. And then the level of position is a function of the classification that they're in. And so we actually just about a year ago completed a review of all of our classifications of all 16 positions. And so I'm pretty confident that they're correctly classified where they are right now. Does that answer your question?
It does. I'm really helpful.
Representative Smith, if you would, any further questions, we'll be prepared to come back tomorrow and resume this discussion. And we're sorry to leave you right now, but we're going to need to do that. So at this time, I'm going to close the public hearing. I'll set up at 5:03, and at the task to gavel, and the committee will be adjourned.
Good job. Thank you.